I don't think this will take a whole lot longer.
Good.
Yeah. Funny stuff.
That's what I'm doing.
So I think that what's left that I sort of wanted to go over is the period of time when the collateral calls start going in to FP, and I understand from what you just said earlier that you left to work directly for Joe Cassano in January of 06, and that you were really sort of out of the world of the multi-sector CDO business. Does that mean that you also were not involved in the collateral calls as they started coming in July of, I think it was July, around then of 2007?
I was not very involved in that whole process.
So could you describe for me the level of your involvement? That way I'll have a better sense of where I can ask you questions.
I was made aware of the collateral call, the first one that came in, and that was around the end of July, beginning of August of 07. And initially, I sat in on some of the calls with Goldman. I still had, obviously, I had interviews with Goldman on other things. And
In the intervening period between January of 2006 and the summer of 2007, you mean?
Yeah. Okay. Still spun a lot of other things with Goldman as an example of an investment bank that we're trying to do other things with.
Was it still Andrew Davelman?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the course of August, we sort of tried to manage the situation with Goldman to figure out how to resolve our issue with them on the collateral, collateral dispute. By my recollection, pretty much by the end of August, sort of the end of August holidays, people go away for the August holidays into September, pretty much was out of any kind of day-to-day activity on that stuff. I did help behind the scenes, just, keeping track of spreadsheets of things and so forth, giving other people information internally, but I wasn't involved really with external discussions.
So would Andrew Davelman, for example, have called you and said, we need collateral on this deal that you and I worked on?
Why don't you explain what happened?
He wouldn't have called me. We would have gotten a formal notice from Goldman Sachs. I happened to be on vacation around the time that Goldman was going to send it. It was the first collateral call that we had gotten on any of our CDO business.
Did FP get notice in advance that this was coming in?
That the collateral
call
was coming?
Why don't you say what you know about it in terms of how you heard?
So I was on vacation, as I said. I had a voicemail on my cell phone from Andy Davelman, which said, just to let you know, Goldman's going to make a collateral call to AIGFP.
Goldman's going to make? Is that exactly?
Or I don't know if it's Goldman's going to make or Goldman has made or...
So something's happened separate from
something's happened. I was in the office.
Knowledge, because he's not in the office.
By the time I got back to the office, certification, to my recollection, the notice had been delivered to FP, and the process of figuring out how to respond to it had begun. So he kind of told me just kind of here's a heads up, but I didn't do anything about it.
You didn't call anybody at FP and notify them.
I didn't respond to the voicemail.
You went back from vacation.
I came back from vacation, and at that point, I learned through internal resources at FP that Goldman had in fact made a margin call on us, and the process of trying to resolve that, I guess, began. And initially, I was involved in some of those discussions, but I pretty quickly was no longer involved.
Why weren't you involved after a certain point?
For one thing, I wasn't directly involved with the CDO business and the credit business anymore. Andrew Forster was the main point person, really, for the firm on that at that time.
Were you surprised?
Did you take yourself out of the loop?
I did whatever I was told.
So someone took you out of the loop?
Joe wanted Andrew to handle it.
Joe Cassano wanted
Andrew to handle it.
Did he tell you that?
Pretty much.
Did he tell you that he didn't want you talking to Andrew Davelman about it, or that he didn't want you handling it?
He told me Andrew Forster. He said Andrew's handling this, which I took that to mean you're not. Andrew is.
Did your contact with Davelman otherwise cease at that point, even on other deals?
No. There were other things we were working on probably. No, I still talk to him. But I didn't talk about this topic because I was not intended to be involved. So,
was there any discussion about the business relationship between Goldman Sachs and AIG FP more generally between you and Andrew Davalin at that time?
There would have been some. I mean, we're always thinking about it because I was still thinking about other things that we were going to do with Goldman, and obviously this comes up as an issue between the firms. But I didn't really have any direct conversations about it at that point going forward. I left it to the other people within the AIGFB who were responsible for handling it and just left it alone.
Given that you were involved in the confirmations and the agreements that were put in place on these deals that would have included, as we talked about earlier, the collateral provisions, did you have an opinion as to whether Goldman's calls for collateral were founded? I mean, whether they were well-founded?
I don't think my involvement in the deals and the confirms had relevance to whether or not Goldman's calls were founded. This is a function of whether Goldman thought there was exposure and whether we thought there was exposure. The conference just said what they said, so that wasn't an issue. It was a question of whether or not, you know, Goldman's view that we owe them collateral was a view that we shared.
Yeah, just to be clear, the way in which the collateral agreement works, one way in which it's triggered is by the value of the collateral, whatever is in
right.
The instrument, let's call it, it drops, right?
Right.
And that requires marking it to market, right?
That could trigger a margin call.
Right.
And
each side marks those instruments, all the various pieces of the swap. Each side is marking them, correct?
That's right.
Is it necessarily agreement between what AIG thinks they're worth and what Goldman thinks
right.
they're worth?
There is not necessarily agreement.
No, and I know from the work we've done that Alan is not involved in the process of disputing that, but there are many, but there are several phone calls where, you know, Goldman's marks are disputed. And history will tell whether those marks were artificially low or not. They certainly were aggressively low.
And we've seen some documents to that effect and certainly have information on the amount of the collateral calls they were making. I am curious for your personal knowledge and also for your opinion as to how it was handled on AIGFP side, given your significant involvement in getting the deals done on the front end. So that's sort of the background of my questions.
Okay, and I think, first of all, there are a couple emails on that, and second of all, it's kind of a long period, so if you can break it down, I guess, as to when. In other words, there's the initial collateral call, and then there's
ongoing collateral calls, and you were not involved. Perhaps it makes sense for you to tell me exactly when you officially ceased to be doing anything on the collateral calls.
Certainly with regard to interfacing with external parties, my recollection, it would have been around the end of August. That first event occurred. Like, I was on vacation, I think it was like July 31st, but so I came back to the office for August, first week in August kind of thing. So in that month of August, I was involved in a few calls and conversations on the topic. Kind of by the end of the month, what was when I would say that my phase out would have occurred. And thereafter, I was certainly not involved in any of the external interfacing with Goldman.
And how were you involved on an internal basis after that?
We began to, you know, create reports and keep other like spreadsheets of all the deals and the marks that we were getting from Goldman and others. And I was one of the people who helped sort of, you know, keep us up to date. I would get information from other sources of FP, people who would, you know, either be the recipients of the information from external sources or whatever. and I would, you know, sort of help kind of the monitoring process internally.
Did you work at all on the valuation from AIGFP's side of the positions? So when, as I understand it, and I believe that, Andy, you said that both sides to the swap marked their positions to market, prior to the first collateral call coming in, are you aware of any specific, or of what specific actions AIGFP did or didn't take to value the CDS positions that it had?
No, I'm not specifically aware.
Are you aware of whether AIGFP did that at all?
I'm not aware of what they did with it.
So you don't know one way or the other?
No.
Were you involved after the collateral calls started coming in the development of the modeling technique that AIGFP ultimately used to say, well, this is how we mark to market the positions. Goldman, you have your marks, and we have our marks. And as I understand it, AIGFP started using a value at risk model and relatively quickly moved to something called a binomial expansion technique model.
Right.
Were you involved in valuing AIGFP's CDS positions using those models?
No.
Were you involved in any of the discussions surrounding what model should be used?
No.
Did you have peripheral knowledge that these models were being developed for that purpose?
I was perfectly aware that they were being developed. I had no involvement whatsoever in the development.
Okay. And you don't have any experience developing financial models to value credit default swaps?
Of this type, no.
Of what type would you have?
No, I don't have any. The answer is no.
Were you involved in the December?
Well, there's something in between there. You're going to December 2007?
Uh-huh.
Because in connection with the BET model,
uh-huh,
there's some gathering of information. And Alan had some role in that, but it's sort of hard to piece it all out.
So these are, why don't you explain the involvement you had?
The only thing I would have been involved in would, well, I don't even know if I gather information. I don't recall.
Phone calls to the...
I may have been involved in a few phone calls, and even that was somewhat scarce, but just trying to collect information from other market participants.
This would have been used in the model.
Yes, to collect market data for us to use in the model, but I did not have any involvement in how we used it or why specifically we used it and whether or not it was actually even used.
So who would have been in charge of this model and would have asked you to make those phone calls?
Well, it would have come through Andrew
Forster.
But Andrew was one of the people involved in developing the model. I don't know how much he was involved. There are other people involved.
Pierre Miko Tease and James Bridgewater.
Pierre Miko Tease, James Bridgewater, and many other people
who worked for that.
But Forster was involved with getting the input.
Responsibility, was to, based on relationships he had, to gather certain inputs. One thing I just say, I think that it should be clear, and I'm not a witness, and I don't even know if Alan is familiar with this, but the AIG, and say the July, certainly by August time frame, was moving away from it was changing in particular the inputs to the model, to the BET model that it had, and it was changing the model that it used. Okay, the driver for that, you can go through the entire record, is by no means any collateral calls. It's rather just a drive to get to a more accurate, a model that will provide a more accurate output, if you will. So I just thought, because you kind of connected the move of the model over that period of time, and it does overlap with the Goldman collateral calls, but the Goldman collateral calls are not driving the change in the model. The changed model is being used to value on the AIG side.
Okay.
Not only for overall, December 5, 2007, that, session that where Mr. Cassano and other people spoke, but also with respect to the collateral calls and what have you. They're moving how they adding things, if you will. But in some way, using the collateral clause or the driver. There's very little of any evidence.
Well, so is it? So
I would add to Andy's point, I wasn't aware of that. I definitely have no knowledge.
Yeah, this is not Alan's issue. This is the people that we mentioned before.
Sure, and we are. Don't think that we aren't talking to.
No, I understand.
A whole bunch of other people as well, and I appreciate that. Since you've brought this up, though, I'm sort of curious. Did AIG actually have a model that it used on a regular basis to value this stuff before?
The BEC model was what it used, and it used prices drawn from the JPMC. Is there anything else besides JPMC? The JPMC matrix would be accurate to identify, but it would draw.
But was that in existence being used before
Andy,
the summer
can we
2007?
Talk perhaps outside the room.
You can correct me. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, we
sure?
Sure.
And this is please. I mean, and thank you for. I mean, we're interviewing a bunch of people, and we will confirm this. And you aren't witnesses, but I'm happy to have you tell us based on your wealth of understanding.
I think that the in August and September they started developing a valuation model, and they hadn't had one earlier. And as far as the inputs. They have various inputs, including this J.P. Morgan matrix. But they also started to use CDO manager prices. And it was the collection of inputs, the collection of CDO manager prices that
right.
Alan had a little bit of. I mean, it's very confusing. The chronology is very confusing because Alan also did a whole series of calls in terms of getting color, which is something that Cassano mentioned on December
right.
7th. But he also, it turns out, was involved with getting some of the prices.
Right, actually,
so we're clear. I'm not sure how different that is from what I said, but basically,
right,
the model itself,
this?
The BET model, does not change in a meaningful fashion.
It didn't exist before.
It doesn't change in a meaningful fashion from the collateral calls from July over time that in terms of doing valuations. The thing that does change are the inputs, which move from the J.P. Morgan matrix to CDO manager prices.
Okay, and we've seen documents on this too, so we will confirm this independently.
It should be clear as the effort to value. I mean, if we want to start valuation with the use of BET and you know leave out any valuation that may have existed before July of that year, but you know that starting then, that was sort of that was completely separate from the collateral calls.
Well, this is actually what I disagree with.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for raising that, and we will certainly confirm it. And if you, okay. So why don't we, having said all of that, let's talk a little bit about what you did actually do to collect the data that went into
right.
the model.
Right. So, we would collect the. So, if you have a CDO, it's made up of 100 different bonds. What we would collect is the prices that we could get from the marketplace, which would come from CDO managers for those 100 bonds.
The CDO bonds or the underlying bonds?
The underlying bonds.
Okay.
Okay, and then we would use the underlying bond prices in the model. This is one, again, that I couldn't tell you how to work because I didn't involve the model. So if we called up a CDO manager and said, hey, we did, you remember us, we did 1-2-3 CDO with you. I had this portfolio. Can you send us your... Typically, we get marks at the end of every month. Sometimes at the end of every quarter, but most managers and most CDO managers would provide the marks, and they would collect the marks from the street. Would typically bought the bonds from. And it's just typically it's common practice. So
it wasn't necessarily that you were asking for an offer price.
No. We're just asking for collect the marks for these bonds.
The bonds in the portfolio.
Bonds in the CDO. So we did a CDO with the manager, and they'd send us a spreadsheet or something with 100 bonds and 100 prices. That would then get delivered into the people who were involved in managing the model, and all those prices were aggregated into the model.
So who specifically would you?
Something clear.
Mm-hmm.
The modeling was all done in London in a different time zone, and Alan was in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
and it's really... So something he knows virtually nothing about.
And I don't really want to go there a whole lot. I mean, if you could just give me sort of the list of the people that you remember contacting on the CDO manager side.
I remember what I said, there's people who do the modeling, and then there's Forster who was getting inputs.
I think she said about the CDO managers.
But I thought you said that you were also calling the CDO managers.
Right.
To give Forster the information
okay,
for the
yeah,
inputs.
Right.
I would call, an example would be TCW. It wouldn't necessarily be me. But people
TCW was the same manager that
right,
came up in one of the
that
emails.
Email, right. And
okay.
It would be me, it might be Adam Budnick, maybe one of the other people in the U.S. But I was one of the people involved. And so we'd call them and say, or get on, actually, you have to call them sometimes just once and say, we want to get on your distribution list, because they provide it to other people too, other investors in other parts of the CDOs that they have done. So we'd say we were involved in, these particular CDOs. So please send us, on a monthly basis, your month-end marks for the portfolios of these CDOs. And so usually you had to bug them. Sometimes occasionally they were automatic, but usually you had to bug them every month. And we would collect all those prices. We keep the spreadsheet of what deals we had, collected the prices from, the most recent prices, and tried to keep that, kind of current. So at the end of every month, for a while, we were just collecting prices. And it was, again, fairly common thing to do.
And is it right, tell me if I'm wrong, because is it right to say that Goldman was giving AIGFP marks on the CDO bonds? And in order for AIGFP to come up with its own value on the CDO bonds, it was getting information on the underlying assets that you were helping to gather, that Adam Budnick was helping to gather, but you wouldn't have been comparing prices that you got from the CDO managers on the underlying bonds to anything that Goldman, for example, would send in, because they're not sending in marks on the underlying bonds. They're sending in marks on the CDO bonds that AIGFP effectively insured.
I actually don't know all the information that we share with Goldman.
Okay.
But the goal was to resolve the dispute on the CDOs, not the underlyings.
Right.
But I don't know information.
But the information that you were gathering was on the underlyings.
Correct.
Okay. And then now, did I miss something, or is it okay to go to December? Okay. So were you involved in the decision in December at all? In the decision in December 5th, 2007, surrounding the write-down in the CDS book?
Not at all.
And the public disclosure?
Not at all.
Of it. Did you work at all with the accountants? Did they come to you for any information?
No, not that I can recall, no.
Did you interact with anyone from PricewaterhouseCoopers at all?
I don't think so, no. I can't recall a single one.
Okay. Were you surprised that all this was happening?
What was happening?
That the collateral calls started coming in?
Were you surprised by the Goldman collateral call?
Yeah, I think so. A little bit, because we didn't think they were worth what they thought they were worth. So
you were just a little bit surprised?
No, I was definitely surprised.
I mean, he told me earlier he was...
No, I was definitely surprised. I was definitely surprised. I don't think I agreed with it, but...
Was there a general... Where did you have conversations with people at AIGFP where you and others expressed sort of anger at what was going on? Did you think that any of this was perhaps motivated by not entirely honest motives on Goldman's part?
I don't know that I accuse them of being dishonest, but I think it was pretty hard to determine what the right answer was. We were pretty far apart, so.
You've seen emails that he wrote on it, right?
It creates.
He wrote an email to Forster explaining his conversation with Dowling. It's a pretty long email. Explains what he was thinking.
I may have seen it. I don't have it with me.
Do you want to show it?
I'm trying to think of it.
just around August 9th. And you'll see that Alan is just kind of businesslike about, let's try to get this behind us because it's causing a lot of problems.
Will you write down the basement areas? We have.
Those are just.
Okay, so we actually haven't had a chance to go through these this set of emails yet. So this is while you were still involved, right after you came back from vacation.
Sorry, what's the date of that email?
August 7th, 2007.
Yes.
You say, Andrew, I have never seen Andy D. more discouraged and despondent about amicably resolving any debate or conflict between our firms as long as I've known him. It's ridiculous that this could rise to this degree of intensity, but it seems like it's gotten really ugly over there. What did Andy Davelman tell you that made you say this?
To my recollection, he was saying that, you know, Goldman had a strong view that they were right, and I think at the time we had a strong view that we were right. So this is, you know, this was going to be a difficult one, more difficult than other conflicts to resolve.
Did you get a sense that he felt that way personally, or that he was being the messenger of that?
I don't remember. He's an honest guy. I don't remember what, you know, if there's a distinction.
So you think he stood behind the collateral call that Goldman made?
I honestly can't remember what the conviction was. I think we were both focused on just getting it resolved so we could get back to doing business together. In other aspects, you know, other things that we're doing with Goldman Sachs.
There's a second email similar to that. Like the next day, there's one that's like that.
Yeah, I think I've seen it, actually. I've had a chance to look at some emails that we just got produced, so that's why we didn't have these for today. Sherwood is Mike Sherwood at Goldman?
They call him Woody.
That's good to know.
You'll see it in the email.
He's a senior guy at Goldman London.
In London. Okay.
And he and Cassano started having the talks.
Right, right. What was his role in London? Do you remember?
I don't exactly know. I just know he's a very senior guy.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm aware of him. Here, you can have this. We've got this now, right? So we can.
You can have it if you want it.
For sure. Okay.
Can I have it?
Did you have any interaction? Let me see. I'm trying to figure out when you were writing these deals, did you ever interact with any risk managers at AIGFP on collateral provisions?
Forster?
He's not a risk,
well,
risk
manager.
Manager, but in credit, he would be, you know, he would have responsibility for being involved.
What was the question exactly?
Did you ever interact with any risk managers on the collateral provisions of the deals? Did you ever have any specific conversations with Pierre Mikotas? Was he the person at the time?
He was not involved with the credit side of the business.
At the time of the deals, he was not. He was a risk, but he was not. Credit was not part of his burden.
So who would have been the credit risk person?
That's what I'm saying. It would have been Andrew.
So no one within sort of the risk management function.
I think so, but again, they may have had some interaction between the two of them that I'm not aware of.
Did you ever have any interaction with... Is there a guy named John Grace that worked at FP? Do you remember a guy named John Grace?
No.
Do you remember anybody at AIGFP that had the function or title of being a liquidity manager?
I don't know that title.
Who would have, to your knowledge, focused on liquidity issues?
Liquidity as a general concept would have been John Liebergall.
How do you spell that?
L-I-E. First name John, J-O-N. L-I-E-B-E-R-G-A-L-L.
G-A-L-L.
John is J-O-N. Yeah.
Right. That's what he's...
He's got a lawyer.
Do you know who the lawyer is?
I forget.
Okay.
You can ask Weil.
Okay. And what was his title? Do you know?
He was an EVP.
I mean, in what capacity? I mean, what function did he serve?
Oh, well, he was responsible for sort of a lot of our balance sheet management, particularly the liability side of our balance sheet. He was involved in a lot of our municipal derivative and funding. We were involved in the business for funding GIC guaranteed investment contracts to municipalities.
So he was involved on the front end looking at that?
Yeah.
Was he involved on the front end looking at the CDS deals on the multi-sector CDOs?
At which time? At what point?
From 2004 to till the exit?
No. At the end he was.
So when did he become involved?
I would say when liquidity issues became involved.
So as I understand it, liquidity issues started in the summer of 2007. So my question was focused on the writing of the business as opposed to the collateral calls coming in later. Was he ever, to your knowledge, involved in looking at the deals when they were written?
I don't recall.
For purposes of analyzing what
right.
liquidity pressures, if any, the deals could pose for AIGFP?
I don't recall if he was.
Okay. Were you involved at all in the
right.
February?
I'll start with Sam. Sorry, go ahead.
Were you involved at all in the February 2008 8K that announced there was a change in the loss that was being taken? Okay. Sort of sitting where you sit now, and you know, I guess I've sat for the past year or two, do you have any sort of general reflections on what went wrong?
I look back and I think that I know I did everything I was supposed to do correctly, properly, based on all the information we had at the time. I think we did everything that we were supposed to do. I wish it turned out differently. It didn't.
So I just have a few sort of wrap up. Were you ever involved in the securities lending business of AIG? Do you have any knowledge of how, if at all, the securities lending business or the losses that business incurred were connected to the problems that faced AIGFP? In 2007 and 2008?
I have no knowledge. As far as I know, they were independent of FP.
Do you have any knowledge of Goldman Sachs ever purchasing credit protection on AIG from AIG?
The single name?
Purchasing credit protection from AIG on AIG? I have no knowledge of transactions like that.
One other thing, and this has come up in other interviews, and it's fine if we want to take this off the record or do it at a subsequent point off the record. One of the issues that the commission is tasked with looking at is the incentive structure at the firms that failed. And so I'd like to know about your compensation.
We have the same concern for Alan that we have for Gary.
Okay.
So let's try to take this up later if necessary.
Okay. So I'll get back in touch with your lawyers then about the information around your compensation. Claire, do you have any other questions?
Just cover basically, I guess.
Oh. So I think you said history will show if Goldman's marks turned out to be aggressively low. Do you have any views on that?
I actually said that, from what I understand, that they were pretty aggressive, but history will show whether they were, you know, appropriate.
I appreciate the clarification.
So, so you asked me if I have views as to whether...
Whether their marks were inappropriately low.
I agree they were aggressive. Very aggressive. What history is going to show us that these bonds ultimately actually incur losses, and we'll find that out in due time.
Do you think it's a lesson learned on sort of a... well, I guess I have a question. I guess I do still have a question.
Okay.
When I look at this now, I see that AIGFP used a model to assess the credit risk, or the risk of loss, the Gorton model, and I see completely separate, and use that to decide where the attachment point was and where AIGFP was willing to come in to step in to write protection. And then I separately see these contractual provisions that seemingly had no connection to sort of that assessment of whether or not AIG should do this deal. And the contractual provisions that I'm referring to are the collateral provisions, mm-hmm. where AIGFP is required to post collateral on the event of a downgrade of AIG or the event of a decline in the market value of the underlying assets of the CDOs. Was there anyone at AIGFP, to your knowledge, who would have had the full view of all the risks to AIGFP of entering into these deals, taking all three of those things into taking all things into consideration and not just sort of the discrete parts of it? Who could I talk to about that?
I don't know. I mean, I think that all the people we've discussed will have insight and views as to AIGFP's overall position. So I think, you know, you'll get different responses from those people. I don't know if there's any single person per se.
So Andrew Forster, for example, would he be a person who should have?
He might.
Joe Cassano.
He might. I don't know. I don't know what specifically they knew, didn't know, or thought at the time. I think.
Anybody else?
I think the universal view is that the risk of loss in these deals was extraordinarily remote, and therefore related risks that would have been incidental are also extraordinarily remote.
But it turned out that, in fact, these risks were separate and triggered by different events. And I'm just trying to figure out who would have been looking down and seeing sort of how all those pieces fit together. Would any of the risk managers, like Pierre Mercatus or Bob Lewis, or
I don't know.
Okay.
Pierre wasn't doing the credit side.
Pierre probably not.
Okay. Well, I thank you for your time today, and happy to give you any time if there's anything, given the task as I explained it, to you of the commission and what we're working on, if there's anything else that you think that we should know as we do our work that we haven't covered here today.
Can I just ask one question? Because I was a little confused by one question you asked, and that was, well, when you were selling protection, would you say that's the same thing as being long the CDO?
When you're selling protection, it's being long.
It's equivalent to being long.
And when you buy protection, it's being short.
Right. Correct. So when Goldman was buying protection, it was taking a short view, right?
On its naked, yes. But if it had the bond on the other side, it had a long offsetting short.
Right, but you don't know what they had.
No, but we know that the bonds, we believe the bonds were sold in many cases to the hands of the people with CDS. So it's presumed that they were short and the long were packaged.
Right, I mean, I was just responding to your question about, you know, did you ever know that Goldman was taking a short position? And they were short, you know, and AIG was long with respect to these CDS. So that's separate from what Senator Levin's looking at, but it's related, I think.
But they were long the bonds on the other side. So they were...
Unless they got out of that position.
Yeah, the question that I think Levin was dealing with is, I don't know how it took so long to sort of make this public that Goldman had a net short position on its books for some period of time. But I think it earlier had said it did not, I think, although it's unclear.
But if you have a CDS on a CDO, and you have the CDO itself, so you've essentially bought credit protection on a bond that you own. So now you own a bond with credit protection, so it's essentially not credit risk free, but certainly credit risk is substantially mitigated. You're flat. You're not in long or short. And that was not just with Goldman, but with many counterparties.
I think what Dixie's saying, what the New York Times has said, is that during the period in question, Goldman was net short counting all instruments, CDSs,
right,
CDOs, etc.
Not sort of specific offsets, but...
Right. That may be.
Okay. So let me just clarify one thing in terms of valuation.
Okay.
I don't want to say exactly when the BET model began, because Dorothy has a different recollection than I did. I just want to make the point that the valuation process began before Goldman Sachs made its collateral call and had an independent driver, that is to get an accurate valuation for purposes of filing with the SEC and letting the public know, and more importantly, for making business decisions as to what they held in terms of credit default swaps and other instruments. Okay? So there's an evolution over that period of time that runs parallel in part to the dispute over Goldman collateral, maybe driven in part by it, but it has an independent rationale, which is to get values right. Okay?
And you said, I believe, that the person, or at least a person to talk to, is James Bridgewater. And was there another?
Well, I'm definitely not encouraging you to speak to Bridgewater, because that's one of my clients, but there are people who are
have
involved.
We not asked you about him yet?
You mentioned
I was like, I have a long list, and I don't remember whose lawyers are whose.
The fair view is that Bridgewater and Mikotas are not involved.
They're in England.
UK.
Are not involved in what's been called the credit side that you focused on today with Alan. They are involved at the back end in this valuation effort.
They came in like September.
If I may make that
comment. Mikotas came in a little earlier.
Go ahead. I think to amplify what Andy said is that the process and the changes in the valuation process, trying to get to the right value, are demonstrably separate from the collateral and going through and trying to find the proper value and the inputs and the best way to do it had different drivers. As an independent process, is trying to value it.
Doesn't mean it didn't have spillover effect in terms of informing AIG as to what an appropriate value, appropriate mark to market would be with respect to CDS A, B, C.
Okay.
And was used as such.
In your view, should that process have begun before 2007? The process of determining a way to properly value?
Are you an accountant?
I'm not an accountant. Well,
but it's somebody who's spent career at age.
I'm not sure because I'm not entirely clear as to what process was in place. So I don't know whether something should have happened differently because I don't know what actually was happening.
Keep in mind that PwC was involved with the valuation decisions all along, and maybe they now want to say, you know, bad AIGFP. But the fact is they were on board with the way it was recorded in the first and second quarter of 2007.
Right, right. Well, sure, but of course learning that a valuation model was developed in late 2007 or mid to late 2007 raises the question of why not sooner? So
we can talk to Mr. Bridgewater and Mr. McCaudis and find out.
I think that you can understand the period prior to that from other people better. I think it's fair that Pierre and James both have something to say because they have heard about it, but there are other people that predate them, and there's prior efforts to value. I mean, there were valuation tools before the PBT model came into being.
Right. Do you want to interview them in London? Is that some place you wanted to show Claire, like BM?
Actually, we really would like to, although I don't think it's in the FCIC's current budget.